give me a beat.
I never meant to call you when you're sorrow. I never meant to call you when you're pain. I don't want to stand out to you laughing.
What's up, Internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 51, recorded April 22nd, 2016. I am Ray Morali, also known as Ray Ray. You guys know me as an NBA online writer for the NoLookPass.com. I also do a wrestling podcast with John Cann called TJR Wrestling Podcast. So, this podcast, we're still going to talk NBA. We'll talk Lakers with Anthony Irwin and Harrison Fagan from Silver Screen and Roll on Lakers Outsiders. And but really, it's been a tough week because we lost an icon in Prince. You guys know him as that legendary musician, singer, actor, Purple Rain. So we're going to go right ahead to the Lakers talk and actually also Burgers talk with Anthony and Harrison. And then we're going to end the show with the little old school segment I do with EJ Christian. But we're going to talk about Prince for about 20 minutes. So, without further ado, here we go. Scratch. Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 52. It's 51. You lose, Ray. I am Ray Ray, joined by the guys from Silver Screen and Roll and Lakers Outsiders and whatever Lakers site you can find, Anthony Irwin and Harrison Fagan. What's up?
You know, I'm just
well, I don't know about any Lakers site you can find. You might have to ask their permission before, you know, you just hire us as writers for them. But doing pretty well.
I'm just happy my name was said before Harrison's. That's really all I cared about.
Oh! Well, how about this? Because you were the first one to appear on the show first. Yeah. That's why.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Chronologically,
I was just going to say he saved the best for last.
Ah! Well, there's that too. And I actually had Harrison twice on here because I specifically had him back on the show for a little callback because I still can't get over the fact that Kelly O'Hara, my biggest crush on the women's soccer team, eats cereal with water, and I can't get over that!
What?
Yes!
That was a purely visceral reaction that I just had right there. That was literally me just going, what? People do that?
And a few minutes ago, Harrison's just felt bad for me because I legitimately broke when I heard that news that she eats cereal with water. I'm still devastated over that.
That's weird.
It's gross.
Do we want to start with the food takes, or do we want to...
I guess, now that we're here, I'm just inconsolable about this.
my question is, like, what does the texture even turn into there with water? Because the milk adds, like, it has some thickness that can get soaked into the cereal and make it better for just a little while, but like water, it just becomes immediately soggy. I can't see that being good.
Why can't you do it separately? Why can't you eat cereal first and then drink water afterwards? Why can't you just do that?
Well, is there a benefit to it?
I don't know.
I think the argument for it, now again, I'm totally playing devil's advocate here because that sounds horrible. But I think the only argument for it is, you know, maybe you're lactose intolerant, and so you don't want to drink milk, but you also don't want to eat dry cereal. And so maybe you just want some type of liquid in your cereal, and for whatever reason you don't want milk. But, I mean, you just got to get past that, because water and cereal, that's just, there's something wrong with that. I'm sorry.
Well, and Frosted Flakes dry are fantastic. That's a great snack.
Agreed.
That's a really good snack.
They're great. Yeah, I agree too. Imagine dipping like Rice Krispies treats in water. Like that's, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Cereal in water is just gross.
I can't even picture it, to be completely honest. I can't think of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Now I blame Harrison for this because like she brought it up in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean that one's on me. That's my.
So can we talk about good food for a little bit here? Like, I just saw you guys, like, talking about In-N-Out Burger for some reason, like, one night on Twitter. And I don't know. That just, like, spiraled out of control for some reason.
Well, I guess I'll start the premise with, I had no idea how passionate, especially Lakers Twitter for some reason, is about food. It's crazy to me that you bring up, I remember one time I brought up apples, that like Fuji apples to me are the best apples.
Okay.
And immediately, okay. What's that?
You're wrong, but okay.
but that's like my case in point, right? That like immediately I brought that up and I had mentions for a good couple days, people saying, oh, whatever other kind of apples there are out there. Like somebody brought up green apples and I just, you're wrong, man.
That was me.
But yeah, the food stuff, In-N-Out, Harrison is of the opinion, right, that In-N-Out is overrated. And I just, you have to move out of Southern California if you're doing that. Give your spot up to somebody who would enjoy and understand what they're eating in In-N-Out.
I don't think my roommate's cool with that because I'm the one that signed the lease, so. but just for a little backstory on this for the like three of you that care, it was about last year. I was on Twitter and I think I forget why I felt compelled to say this, but I think I'd seen people talking about In-N-Out just a whole lot over the last couple days. And in my opinion, it's just overrated. Like it's the best fast food burger, but people talk about it like it's this cultural event is going to In-N-Out, and I just disagree. Like it's fine, it's pretty good, but I think it's just a little, the way that people talk about it, they overhype it. And when I've brought people to California or I've brought people to In-N-Out that have never had it before, they agree the internet overhyped it.
See, here's the thing, here's the connection with In-N-Out, because I might have told you this story before, I might have not, but I met a girl at In-N-Out like 5 years ago.
Heard this story.
Yeah, Harrison has heard this story, but like, we just talked about burgers for like 5 minutes and she smelled really good and she looked cute and all that stuff. And I never got her number. And I told the story on Twitter like 2 a.m. and my mentions blew up like the next morning. Like even NBA players were talking to me about it, like, what the hell's wrong with you? Why didn't you get her number? So now it's like the In-N-Out girl is like legendary. Like that was 5 years ago.
Now you said she smelled good, but was it In-N-Out that smelled good? Cause that's a really high likelihood there.
Well, We can go ahead and expand on that myth, I guess. Like, yeah, she's stuck in and out. No, I'm kidding. But
yeah.
We can go ahead and do that because, like, geez, it was 5 years ago. I never saw her since, and it was in my neighborhood In and Out too. I never saw her after that. It was weird.
That's yeah. my thing with In and Out is that for me the reason I appreciate In and Out is that they still do burgers properly. It's still decently priced. You go to like Umami Burger or some of these, you know, hipster burger places, and you pay like $15 for a burger. And that's not American. That's not how this should be done. they have all these crazy ingredients that's going into these burgers. And it's like, no, give me something I could cook on my barbecue. You know, give me a double-double. Give me the cheese, the spread. I hate tomatoes, but give me the cheese, the spread, the lettuce, pickles, and then they slice up those peppers in there. And that's a nice, easy burger to eat. You get out of there for $10 and that's what this great country was built on. Make burgers great again.
I was about to make that joke. Thank you, Burger Donald Trump. But on In-N-Out for me, what's funny is for me now is that I'm known as this In-N-Out hater guy. I think it's terrible, whatever. I don't even eat any burgers anymore, and people are still, like, because I'm a vegetarian now, and people still get mad at me about this.
And how long was this ago? Like last year, right?
Yeah, it was about last year when I said it overrated. Biggest mistake I've ever made. I had people in my mentions for the next day and a half at least, calling me an idiot, telling me to move out of Southern California. People were, I had a couple writers from my site say that I should let go. you know, and I'm not entirely sure how serious some of them were. So the lesson I learned was I don't talk about In-N-Out publicly anymore unless I'm on a podcast that people are going to listen to. So I guess I really didn't learn anything.
Yeah, so what's on the internet is basically on the internet forever because, again, the In-N-Out girl happened 5 years ago, and I still get mentions about it. So, you know, it's ridiculous. So, what other burgers do you like, Anthony? What about, like, say, Five Guys, or Fat Burger, or Shake Shack, or something?
You know, I haven't been to Shake Shack yet. I'm not in LA, so I haven't been to Shake Shack yet. To me, if I were asked, you know, the best burger I've ever had, aside the ones that I cook myself, because I like to be able to cook the burger myself.
Party at Anthony's house!
Party at my house! Especially, hey, when Byron gets fired, I'm throwing a kegger, so everybody come on over.
Okay, but, we're holding it to that.
But the Apple Pan is just, that's what burgers, you know, you go there and part of it is the setting, it's really old school. You don't think of apple pie and burgers, you know, in the same sitting as what it should be, but they do go together really, really well. Those hickory burgers there at the Apple Pan is oh my goodness, I'm starving now just thinking of. How about you, Ray? Do you have a favorite burger that comes to mind?
I mean, I'm an In-N-Out guy, so but have you tried Whataburger in Texas?
Yes,
that was the one that I think I said Whataburger was better than In-N-Out, and that was that was the one that really made people mad.
Yeah, that's when you're going too far. You could say it's overrated because everything on the internet is overrated, but when you compare it to Whataburger, like, what is wrong? Ugh, Harrison.
I remember liking Whataburger, but again, I mean, I haven't had it in a long time, so.
Is Texas Twitter gets mad at me when I mention Whataburger because I say I like In-N-Out better, and they just get mad at me. Like, it's how California's In-N-Out. Like, Texas gets mad at me for quote-unquote bashing Whataburger.
I've had both, and Whataburger, to me, what separates In-N-Out is the freshness of the lettuce and how, you know, it really adds to the texture of the burger, whereas Whataburger, to me, when I think Whataburger, I think of, like, hardly any lettuce, a lot of mustard, some jalapenos on there, but the lettuce is kind of lacking there, so that's where I would. And I have family in Texas who come out to Southern California, and they all prefer In-N-Out to Whataburger too. So, sorry, Texas.
what about Rally's or / Checkers?
I never had it.
Where is that a Texas one too?
No, California.
It's Rally's here in California. Checkers everywhere else.
Gotcha.
I think.
Yeah. You know who makes a good an underrated burger is Carl's. Carl's makes a pretty good burger.
I don't go to Carl's anymore because I got food poisoning there twice.
Yeah, that's Jack in the Box for me. I don't go back to
that's Subway for me.
We all have like our own like demonic restaurants basically. Like, okay, I can't go to Carl's and Anthony can't go to Jack in the Box and Harrison can't go to Subway.
There go all your sponsorship opportunities, right?
I know. Well, there you go, right.
So Subway Girl for me means a very different thing than In-N-Out Girl. I was there last year and I went to Subway and this, you know, this kind of cute girl came out of the, she had just, I guess, cleaned the bathrooms. She was an employee and I assumed that she had washed her hands. The food poisoning I got the next day after consuming Subway disagreed, and yeah, so I was not super pleased with that Subway on 17th Street in New Mesa. I'm gonna call them out. The next day I had to actually I probably shouldn't even get into that. Yeah.
Oh man.
So while we're on call-outs, so that means you, Carl's Jr. in Cerritos, and Carl's Jr. in Anaheim.
Oh, twice?
Both of you.
It happened twice?
Two different locations. Carl's Jr. Anaheim, 1999, Carl's Jr. in Cerritos, 2005. I still remember those. So, no more Carl's Jr. for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Kate Upton tried to get me back into burgers with her sexy commercials and everything, but no, can't do it. I think I might be gay. I don't know, but it didn't work.
What's funny is that moonshine burger that they just released. Like, I can't imagine that's good. Like, if anybody out there has actually drank moonshine, nobody drinks it for the flavor. Like, nobody says, you know what my burger needs right now? That terrible burn that moonshine produces without any of the buzz. Like, that sounds terrible. Why would you do that to a burger?
Yeah, I had moonshine last year for my roommate in Portland, and I'm like, ah, hell no, I can't do that. You can go ahead and have that, man. I don't want moonshine.
Yeah, it's drinking rubbing alcohol. That's what it's literally what you're doing, and you're putting that on a burger now. Like, Carl's, do better.
Carl's has a weird thing about making these strange burger combos. Like, they had that nacho cheeseburger a couple of years ago that I never ate, but I watched my friend eat it. He seemed to enjoy it. It was like a burger with nacho cheese on it, and I was just wanting to throw up the whole time. I did not enjoy my meal. It was just gross looking.
So here,
Carl Jr. can have me back if, say, Charlotte McKinney or Keith Upton has burgers with me at a Carl Jr. That's probably the only way I will get I'll eat Carl Jr. again.
And they're working on it right now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But Harrison, what's your you know, vegetarian alternative to a burger? Like, do you just do like a grilled cheese? I know In-N-Out, I've heard, does good grilled cheese sandwiches.
I've heard that too, but I've never had it. A lot of places have surprisingly good veggie burgers, actually. Like, you mentioned Umami Burger, and their veggie burgers are awesome.
Mm-hmm. I have one of my best man, actually, at my wedding. He has been dating a vegetarian. I don't know if she's vegan or vegetarian, but she, you know, I was barbecuing one weekend in the backyard, and she brought over a veggie burger, you know, and asked me to cook it. And I honestly asked the question, Harrison, I'm still kind of wondering, is it possible to undercook a veggie burger? Because there's no fear of salmonella or anything, right?
Right. No, I don't think so. No, I don't think that you can undercook them.
Right. So I guess I didn't mess up the burger, so that's good to know.
You can definitely overcook them, I will say from personal experience, but meaning that I burned it. Really
yeah.
Bad.
No. Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I can't. All right. How about this then? And unfortunately, Harrison, you're kind of taken out of this conversation again. But Ray, the other big conversation that was on Twitter was how people prefer their steak cooked. Mm-hmm. I personally prefer it if I'm at a good place or if I get my meat from a good butcher. I prefer it like rare, like, you know, purple. I love the flavor there, but I'm weird like that. Jenny, my wife calls me a wolf. How do you prefer your steaks cooked?
Medium rare is fine, but I'm not, as long as it's not like, you know, past medium.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fine with medium rare. That's what I prefer.
Same.
So.
Same.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Harrison, what's your ultimate meal? Like, I'm sorry, Ray, I took over the
podcast. No, it's cool, it's cool.
Ultimate meal. I don't know. See, that's the hard thing for me with these food conversations now. It is like, I just don't place that much importance on food. I mean, it's just kind of, it's sustenance, but I just like, I don't have like super strong opinions about it. And that's why I think it's funny that I'm known as the food hot take guy. When all I did was I said In-N-Out, I think it's objectively overrated. Like, I definitely don't think it's bad. It's just like, it kind of, like, it's fine. But I don't know that I have an ultimate meal anymore. I don't, like, I mean, I really like the veggie burgers at, Cheesecake Factory are really, really good. I'm trying to think. I don't know, like, I don't have strong food opinions.
I find it hilariously ironic that you're a food hot take guy, but most of your meals can go uncooked.
But,
So, Harrison, see, the thing is, it's like, when people say overrated, it's like, they immediately think, oh my god, you're bashing the entire thing out of it. When it's like, you know, it's rated, like, it's not a 10, it's a 9 or whatever. You know, that's what it means to be overrated.
No, it's like, it's, for a fast food burger, it's a 9 or a 10, but it's not a 30. Like, and I feel like people talk about it like it's a 30.
Yeah. And I wish I could get to your mindset where food is just sustenance, where you don't have to think about eating, because, you know, that means, like, you can just do whatever the hell you can. You don't have to spend that much time thinking about food. You know what I mean? And you spend less money, and you just do whatever task you need to get done. So, in a way, I envy you in that aspect.
See, it just sounds sad to me. It just sounds like if you had your way, you would just drink some. Well, you eat oatmeal, so it is what you do. You just eat some vanilla goop that has all the proper nutrients.
No, if you make oatmeal with fruit and cinnamon, it's like, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm not an oatmeal guy. I can't do it.
Okay, other than burgers, Anthony, what's like what is your ultimate meal? Like, would you have like pizza, spaghetti, fried chicken? What's out there for you?
Actually, the pizza to me is what I got in trouble saying. I said that pizza's overrated.
And I
get out of my podcast!
You got mad at me.
Get out of my podcast now. No, sorry, just go.
But my thing with pizza is like it was my favorite food back in like elementary school, and every like all my taste buds have, I'm not going to say matured because there's no part of me that's actually mature. But I find it crazy that people would say like, yeah, my last meal would be a, you know, something something pizza, and that's just, it's crazy to me. For me, my ultimate meal would be a nice ribeye with caramelized onions and mushrooms on top. I'd make it a surf and turf with scallops on the side. I would have crab cakes as my appetizer. My beverage of choice would be an old fashioned with rye. And then to top it off, I'd have a cannoli. Like that would be, that's the ultimate meal for me.
I'm not too picky on food, but like, I love sushi.
Oh, yeah.
I love sushi, but I cannot eat, if there are bones in my fish, I can't eat that. Because when I was 8, a bone lodged into my throat, and that traumatized me. So I am never eating fish with bones, ever. But if it's boneless, I will dig in that fish.
You've had a pretty rough go with food.
I know, right?
Food poisoning, like gouging your throat with fish bones, like...
Yeah, awful. It's awful, isn't it?
Ruining your crush when you find out she eats terrible cereal.
God, you want to go on a podcast, Anthony? No, I'm just like crushed right now by everything going on food related.
Just go ahead and take 15 minutes, come on back when you're ready, and then
we can be... Yeah, I know.
I'm actually, that you offered him the podcast and not me. Like, this slice all over the place today.
This is Jamie Nagio from TWC Sportsnet, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
Girl, you know that there's one thing that I love, but it's not you I'm thinking of. I want the ultimate cheeseburger.
Bring it down.
Cheese meat, cheese, cheese meat, and that's it. Baby, you know it's hot and juicy. The chef will make it till you order it. When I say meat, you say cheese. Meat, cheese, meat, cheese. When I say meat, you say cheese. Meat, cheese, meat, cheese. When I say meat, you say cheese. Meat, cheese, meat, cheese. When I say meat, you say cheese.
Hey guys, before we continue with Anthony and Harrison, let me just remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show on Stitcher as well as Rary.net, and this podcast is syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. Follow me on Twitter at the No Look Pass, follow the podcast Twitter at RaryIsFun, and follow my partner from the old school segment, EJ Christian, at EJChristian7 on Twitter. So let's get on with it. Let's talk Lakers with Harrison and Anthony. See? I said Harrison's name first.
Well, it's going to get worse now because we're going to talk about the Lakers a little bit here. Oh, so,
man.
Yeah, the 17-65 Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't even know where to start with this because as of right now, well, Byron Scott is still not fired. And there's this lingering effect now that he might be kept for next year. So, what over to that?
You go ahead and start, Harrison. I'm gonna go and take that. I'm gonna assume the fetal position that Ray Ray was just talking about because.
Well, it's just with each passing day, it looks more and more like he's going to be back. There were those reports right after the final game of the season that there was a strong belief within the organization that they were going to keep him as coach for next year, and it sounds like that line of thinking that he'd do better with a better roster is kind of winning out, which to me is the most asinine thing that they can suggest to the fan base. Like, of course he'll do better with a better roster. Like, it turns out if you sign a couple max free agents, like, the team will be better than a 17-win team that it was this year. How much better, I don't know. But it's like, that's not exactly speaking to his plaudits that he, or like his, you know, his abilities that he needs like a drastically better roster. Like every coach needs a good roster to do better. It's like, you know, like that's not rocket science there, but I don't think that he's getting the best out of the rosters that he has is the larger issue. Would you agree, Anthony?
But that's the thing is that at no stage in his career have players, you know, when he left, all the players afterwards said that we actually felt like we could get more out of the teams he's coached. So if the Lakers are going to say that, yeah, we just want to see him with a better roster, chances are the team's still going to be frustrated when he's eventually fired. And that's a point that Darius made on the show with me this week, was that this guy isn't the coach of the future. Nobody in their right minds actually thinks that way. And I wouldn't imagine after, you know, it's a stretch to think that his team option would be picked up next year. And then it's an even larger leap to think that he might be picked up beyond this contract. So if that's the case, then why not hire somebody from a very deep pool of coaching candidates this year? You look around and there were actually, you know, you had Tibbs and you had Brooks who were already off the market, but then you still have Messina, potentially Luke Walton, and then on down the line, you know, in terms of guys that could actually step in and be improvements over Byron. And what I'm afraid of is that the Lakers wind up getting forced into keeping Byron for the wrong reasons, being that not that he's actually better than the candidates that were out there, but that the candidate, you know, the market dried up, and now, well, we don't have any other choice but to keep this guy again. And that to me is pretty representative of a highly flawed organization and a non-functioning organization, essentially.
And then going back to their coaching search, when they were talking about they want a known commodity, and like that, the thinking is that that's kind of still driving their thinking, that they don't want to take a shot on some guy that hasn't been a head coach yet. And it's like, that's one thing if your coach is, like, say Mark Jackson that you're currently employing, where the team has had some success under him, and yeah, you could fire him and go with something unknown, and it could be way better, but it also could be way worse. You just don't know, and like, you have like something decent. This guy has not only coached the two worst Lakers teams in history, but he, as we've talked about many times, he has the worst winning percentage of any coach to have coached 1,000 games. What you have is terrible. He is established, like, the established candidate is terrible. And so, by giving him up, and even if you're taking a chance on someone unknown, there's very little to suggest that you couldn't pick one of those names that you mentioned, or, you know, a lot of assistants in the NBA, and they wouldn't do a slightly better job.
He tried to win with his roster, and he still failed. Like, 17 wins. Yeah. And there was kind of a reason why they got Roy Hibbert, Brandon Bass, Lou Williams. They tried to make this into a playoff team.
Yep.
And they failed miserably. So I don't understand why they're still keeping him around. And obviously, the young guys they're not going to develop under Byron when Byron's throwing them out under the bus like the entire season.
To that point, I would actually be interested to see if you could go back through, you know, Take-A-Tude or whatever it might be. But I'd be interested to see how many people who were calling the Lakers a playoff team at the beginning of the season, you know, all the mouth breathers who thought that. And then is it safe to wonder if those are the same people right now who were saying you can't fire Byron because he's had such a bad team? And if that's the case, and that's the complete lack of consistency that we're gauging Byron Scott and this Lakers organization on the whole on, then there's no way to properly understand which direction the organization is going in. And actually, that's what I come back to, and that's what I'm the most concerned about, is that you have two factions of the Lakers, the basketball ops and the business ops, or Jim Buss and Jeannie Buss, respectively. And they're pulling this franchise in two completely different directions. There's no way that this organization can function at even a decent level with that kind of leadership. It's just that never works out well.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like they almost seem like they're afraid to can Byron because he's a former Laker.
Yeah.
He knows what it takes to be a Laker, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So.
I've kind of speculated a time or two as to whether or not they're afraid to rub Magic the wrong way. You know, and all the potential business connections that Magic might have, you know, and the pull that Magic still has in the city of Los Angeles. I mean, we saw what happened when Magic tweeted out, you know, how happy he was that Mike D'Antoni was fired or resigned or whatever. And people got behind whoever that next candidate was going to be. In this case, it was Byron, so it helped that it was a Showtime Laker, and there was that to get behind. But after Byron, or after Magic, tweets out, you know, this high praise for the Lakers for nudging out Mike D'Antoni, when there are reports that suggest that I trust really well that that's not even the case, that Mike D'Antoni resigned of his own accord, and that's why it took so long that he actually did that.
Mike D'Antoni did resign.
No, I mean, because there's the conversation I had yesterday a bunch was Mike D'Antoni resigned, but he was pushed out, and he resigned to save face. And that's not at all what happened. You know, that's not how that worked.
So he resigned because they weren't willing to give him an extension. Didn't want to coach as a lame duck.
Right. Or I don't know if it was, I think he had a 2-year option that they weren't sure about picking up.
Yeah, it was something like that. He wanted them to pick up his option for the next year. He didn't want to coach with 1 year left on his contract. So he wanted them to either pick up that next year or give him an extension or something along those lines.
And the sad part is, because of how bungled that situation was, Mike D'Antoni, I would still be thrilled if Mike D'Antoni was a coaching candidate for this team. I would, you know, with the point guards that they have and the direction the basketball is going in, I would be absolutely thrilled to have this guy at the head of the Lakers. There's a good chance that if Mike D'Antoni was still around, they wouldn't have the pick that they have this year because he gets wins at a higher rate than Byron Scott does. And he's not even, he can't be an option. The Lakers can't backtrack and rehire somebody who many people think that they just nudged out the door. That's not how this works, and that's not their style, and that's really too bad because he is a really good coach.
It's funny, in this results-based league, Byron Scott's only had 38 wins in the last two seasons, and he's still around, which is so baffling to me, right? So.
Right, and when you say it's a results-based league, sometimes the process gets overlooked, and somehow both aspects of that equation are being overlooked. We don't care about process, and now somehow we don't care about rules, so we just shrug emoji our way through another dark season next year.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine, at least specifically D'Angelo Russell being pleased with Byron and still being around as coach.
Well, that's the other thing, is that there are a lot of rumblings and whispers, and you know, in my opinion, when there's smoke, there's fire, typically.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of concern that D'Angelo Russell was not very happy with Byron Scott. And to be completely fair, I think he's completely right to be unhappy with him, given how Scott repeatedly threw him under the bus publicly. You know, while the entire team is struggling, sometimes D'Angelo Russell caught the brunt of that criticism, and it was almost always unfairly.
Yeah. So, Harrison?
No, I mean, I agree. I don't know how much I have left to add on Byron Scott that I haven't said already. I just don't understand how you could go into next year with him as head coach and think that that's your best option.
I always joke around, like, it can't get any worse, right? And then you realize they can still lose their top three pick by next month, so.
The only reason to keep him around, I guess, is if you lose that pick and you want to tank and get the best pick possible. But, yeah, or that there's all these reports that, you know, Jeannie really wants Jim out and that she's kind of pushing to keep Byron around, and you kind of put two and two together. And it's like, okay, she wants Byron around so that, and this is again just speculation, but that she wants to keep Byron around just so that next year when the Lakers don't make the Western Conference Finals, she can do a clean sweep of Jim and Byron and bring in Phil and Phil can bring in his own coach and they don't have to worry about they just hired a coach to a multi-year deal this summer that they're going to have to fire when he's not a triangle coach that Phil wants to keep around.
Yeah, that's a doomsday scenario. When Phil is added to the already concerning situation that the Lakers find themselves in, it becomes downright scary at how Jeannie seems to be potentially, if this is actually how it turns out, if she was manipulating to get her fiancé into this equation, that's just great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's not a good outlook for the organization if that's actually true. And again, we don't know that, but it is. That's not good.
So who has a better future, the Lakers or the Sixers?
Ray, why do you got to do that?
I'm semi-serious about this question because on my last week's podcast, I talked about how the Sixers' culture is horrible right now. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a big fan of the process at all. Mm-hmm. Because they're alienating fans, they're alienating players, they're alienating agents, they're alienating everybody. And with that kind of culture, it's hard to turn around unless you get that kind of star potential, like, say, Damian Lillard, who is a star that can turn around, that wants a winning culture, instead of DeMarcus Cousins, who's a star, but has mostly empty stats because he can't get his team to win.
Right.
Some of that future outlook is going to depend on the lottery next month and if the Lakers keep their pick or if it's going to Philadelphia. Because Philly could then, in that case, have two top five picks, and then the future looks even a little bit better for them. While the Lakers have none, and like nothing to show for how bad their season was this year.
And the other thing to keep in mind with Philly, and there's a lot of, you know, questioning whether or not Embiid is ever going to be healthy, but if, let's say, he comes back and plays next year, and then all of a sudden you have Dario Saric, who could also come in next year, and the Philly, and Philly gets a top three pick of their own, and then potentially lands one of the Lakers' top five picks, now you're talking about five high-end lottery, you know, with Okafor and Nerlens Noel already in the mix, you're talking about five high-end assets that, sure, they might not fit together as it stands right now. It's not like Embiid, Noel, and Okafor can all play at the same time. But those are all guys who they could now move, and either if they want to broaden their foundation of youth, or if they want to bring in a veteran that they would now, you know, hold up as the face of the franchise, they have the pieces to move forward. And Brett Brown is a exponentially better coach than Byron Scott is. And as it stands right now, both guys are sticking around. So while I laughed and all that, I might be open to saying the Sixers are in a better spot.
Brian Colangelo is back there as president of operations, and Mike D'Antoni is there as associate head coach. So who knows how long Brett Brown will last there?
Yeah, right. and if Brett Brown gets canned, I'd be perfectly fine taking a look at Brett Brown. He developed those kids, and all those. There was never a single grumbling that I heard of that players were unhappy playing for Brett Brown. There were grumblings, or there were concerns raised about, you know, like you talked about the culture of playing in Philadelphia, and Jahlil Okafor's two bar fights don't necessarily speak to a grounded foundation out there in Philly. But for the most part, all those guys improved, the ones who played for Brett Brown, and all of them speak high praises of the guy. And I don't think any of the Lakers' young core would speak high praises of Byron Scott the way they have of Brett Brown.
Well, Clarkson has publicly, to be fair.
Isn't he also the guy who said, don't say anything crazy to D'Angelo Russell?
Hey, he's defending Byron Scott. That. More than he defended anyone else this year, but...
So, before we go to the playoffs, let's compare Burgers to the Sixers and the Lakers. What Burger would the Sixers be? And what Burger would the Lakers be?
Like, currently or going forward in the future?
Currently.
I see the Sixers as one of those startup hipster places. It's not Umami right now, you know, or it isn't, you know, a Slater's 50-50 right now, because those places are now well-founded and successful as businesses. But if somebody were to, open one of those hipster burger places, I could see that as what Philly is, because they do offer a lot of potential. And then for the Lakers, they're like a McDonald's.
Yeah, you took mine. I was going to say it's McDonald's because it's this brand name that everybody knows about, that has like a lot of fans, a lot of people go there and look at them, but then you go there, you order the burger, you lift up the bun and look at it, and it's like a little gray, and like, it just, it kind of tastes a little funny, and, you know, that's kind of where the Lakers are at right now.
Yeah, I agree with McDonald's being the Lakers. I guess I'll put Carl's Jr. on the Sixers, because we've got poisonous culture right now. I guess they'll be able to play there.
I guess really quickly, we could call the Lakers Jack in the Box. Like,
oh,
like you
say. Get out.
Well... So it's been a bunch of blowouts so far in the playoffs. Of course, Game 3 with the Rockets and the Warriors, the Rockets won by one. But, you know, that was also questionable to begin with, because Harden fouled Iguodala the last play. But what have you liked about the playoffs so far, and what have you hated?
I guess I'll start. I really liked that vine yesterday of the Rockets
being
despondent. Responded after a game winner. I thought that was amazing.
It was hilarious. That's
my favorite part of the season, to be completely honest.
I've seen some people defend, it's like, oh, they left too much time on the Warriors, and they're not like, you know, they don't want to celebrate a potential game winner because the Warriors could still win this game. But still, it's not often you see serious players, like, with 2 seconds left, they lead by one, and they're, like, not even responding to anything at all.
No, you have one guy jumping around. I think it was Clint Capella.
Yeah, it was Clint Capella, yeah.
Capella's jumping around like, yes, we got a chance. We're going to beat the Warriors, guys. This is awesome. And then you cut to three guys that are like, oh, man, I have reservations in Cancun for Monday.
Aside from that, but to your point, I think you said at the beginning, Ray, that the playoffs overall haven't been very good. And I think what that speaks to, and that's a situation that I think we're going to see a lot more moving forward, in that you have this haves and haves not society that the tanking has created in the NBA, that you're going to have, you know, teams at the bottom that's just going to remain at the bottom until they get a superstar. And then you're going to have these, you know, crazy super teams at the top. I'm not saying that the Warriors are going to go on and win 74, 75 games again next year, but you're going to have these first-round matchups of bad to mediocre playoff teams at the bottom of each conference going up against really, really good ones up at the top. And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon. And what I'd like to see is if they reconstituted the playoffs and took out, you know, if they made it, took out conferences, you might get a little bit less of that, you know, and more interesting matchups throughout the year. Because when I watch the Eastern Conference games, they're trudging in the mud and everything, and so long as they continue to just play against each other, that's how that's always going to be. So automatically, almost, I just tune out the Eastern Conference until maybe the Eastern Conference Finals, and then just wait to see, you know, who steps up to get beat by the Western Conference team in the following the following series. But I do think the second round of the Western Conference coming up is going to be insane. It's going to be really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will be.
And one thing that I would like is I'd like if they did what the D-League used to do, where you got to pick your opponents.
Didn't hockey do that too? Or
who?
I felt like hockey did that too.
They might have. I'm not a big hockey guy, but
neither am I. But
the D League did that, and it's like that kind of adds some drama to it, because then at least the lower seed, it's kind of like they have this, you know, voice in their head, and there's that narrative of like, you know, this team picked us because they thought that we were the easiest team to beat, mm-hmm. and so like you can't even get that cliche in these post gamers about, you know, you have to respect every opponent and stuff. It's like, no, you didn't respect them. You thought you picked them as the team you were most likely to beat. And so I think that would add, like, maybe a little bit more drama to it. I don't know, but overall I agree. The first round has been kind of terrible. Like, the most noteworthy stuff has been the off-the-court moments.
Yeah, really. Like Stanley Johnson saying, oh, I'm in LeBron's head, even though they lost by 16 points.
Yeah, that was legendary. I love that Mike Brown, you know, because he was mentoring Stanley Johnson the last couple of years, so I'm choosing to believe that Mike Brown, when he's kind of off camera, just talks crap on LeBron the whole time and was like, Stanley, you got to promise me when you get to the league you're going to knock that guy out. You got me fired, okay?
Yeah.
I want more of that, though. Like, as dumb as Stanley Johnson sounded there was, you know, and everybody made the take after the fact, like, oh, he just went and pissed off LeBron, like, here goes LeBron. And I want more of that between athletes. I like the animosity. I kind of miss the 80s when guys just didn't talk to, and I sound really old saying this, and I completely admit to that, but it's fun when you don't know if these guys actually do respect each other, or if they do respect each other, if they just flat out don't like each other. It's fun to watch guys compete when you add that extra little oomph to the matchup.
Yeah, I know people clamor for 90s basketball all the time. They said it was the best ever, but they don't. The thing about they liked about the 90s is that it was the personalities and the attitudes, not the play, because the play was horrible. Like, they were scoring 80 points a game, and it's not fun to watch. But the personalities, the trash talk, the attitudes, it was all on point in the 90s. So that's what I miss, and we need to see more of that.
So I think what we're agreeing is that the playoffs needed swagger back, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to say, you know, there's a player on the Lakers that maybe a couple playoff teams could use. You know, maybe they want some bench shooting. We could get some swag back in the playoffs. I want Nick Young in some first round series with LeBron next year. Saying, you know, I think I'm in his head, guys.
As long as no one is filming him,
right? That's what I was going to say. Is that if somebody wants to irk Nick Young in the playoffs, they just get, you know, they just pretend to be recording him on the court at all times.
Yeah, he's gonna panic and warn all LeBron's teammates when he sees him doing the fake taking the pictures with the camera phone before games.
Yeah. What's funny is that I think the Pistons are the ones that are talking a lot, because besides Stanley Johnson, there is Stan Van Gundy, like, saying, oh, they're not going to call fouls on LeBron James, and he gets fined for it, which is awful, but...
Right. You can't find somebody for saying something interesting in these league-sanctioned sideline reports. They're worthless, usually. He finally said something interesting, and you force him to cut you a $25,000 check. That's not right.
Yeah, it's not. But anyway, yeah, we're just looking forward to the second round, because right now, like, as much as Detroit's competing, like, they're probably gonna lose in a sweep at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we got the Spurs and the Grizzlies later, which is just awful, because the Grizzlies only have, like, one star left and five players left or whatever. Jordan Farmer's starting for them.
Wait, you mean the Spurs didn't get a first round bye? They're actually playing someone?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. The Vancouver Grizzlies or something.
Well, and it's funny too, because the story, you know, usually if the Golden State Warriors had lost to any team other than the Houston Rockets, it would be a story. But because the Houston Rockets so openly hate each other, the story after the fact is, well, that's one more game of rest for Steph Curry.
Yeah, there's no Stephen Curry playing, and it would have been even worse if the Rockets lost, really. Because, come on, like, you lose at home without Stephen Curry on the other team?
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm saying, like, there was a lot of talk of the Golden State Warriors going 16-0, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that died mathematically last night. But it was crazy to me that there was that talk at all, when you consider next round they'll have to go up against, I believe, is it the Thunder? They'll have to face off against the Thunder?
The Clippers, actually.
Those Clippers games against the Warriors are always bloodbaths, and then after that, their reward for that is going up against probably the Spurs in the following. There was no way they were going to go 16-0 in the playoffs. That would have been insane.
Yeah, it would have been rough.
Yeah, there's too many other teams that can at least threaten them a little bit.
Right, mm-hmm. and for that to have ended in the first round here like that, I guess it takes away just a little bit more, but that never should have been a story in the first place.
I guess we're still waiting for the Warriors if they lose three times in the playoffs, because the 72-10 Bulls lost three times in the playoffs. I guess they're watching out for that now, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. So I guess I'm just reaching. Go ahead and pub your stuff, your social media, websites you work at. Go ahead.
This is Harrison. I work at silverscreenandroll.com. You guys should all check it out. We got some great stuff sometimes. And you can follow me on Twitter at @HMFagen, F-A-I-G-E-N.
Not In-N-Out Hater, guys.
Yes, not at In-N-Out Hater. Although that's an account I'm, like, considering making.
I am at Anthony Irwin LA. I am the podcast host, and I occasionally write over there at Silver Screen and Roll. And then I also help Darius over there at Foreign Blue and Gold. And, just getting ready for what seems to be an insane offseason and hopefully a really good second round.
Yeah, and one day let's go get some burgers somewhere. What the hell do we eat in Vegas again? I forget.
That place was pretty good, though.
Yeah, I'm just saying, what was that place again? What was it called?
I forget, but remember they had, like, the two menus? It was the healthy life and the something life.
It was happy and healthy.
Happy and healthy, and there's something about naked something. Well, I forget what it was.
The legs or something like that were naked for how, you know, regarding the chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like that if they weren't fried.
Yeah, exactly. That place was good.
Vegas.
Yeah, Las Vegas. So I guess I'll see you guys in Summer League if I don't see you for burgers some other time.
You'll see us for burgers in Summer League as long as they have veggie ones.
Yeah. In-N-Out Hater. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Moore from CBSSports.com. Listen to Ray Ray's Fundamental as much as you can, as often as you can, because it's awesome, he's awesome, the NBA is awesome, and you are awesome. Have a great day.
Dig if you will, the picture of you and I engaged in a kiss. The sweat of the body covers me. Can you, my darling, can you picture this? Dream of the Concordia, an ocean of violets in bloom. Animals strike curious poses.
I'd like to thank Anthony and Harrison for coming on the podcast. It was some great food, Laker, and basketball playoff talk. We're going to end this podcast with a little tribute to Prince as EJ and I go old school and go nostalgic for the icon Prince. Thanks, guys.
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ.
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ. EJ Christian with me from the Earnestly Speaking podcast. And this is really tough because we've seen our share of deaths, obviously. It's life. But this one hits hard for a lot of us. And, you know, the iconic singer Prince passed away Thursday morning. And this is just, wow. You know?
Singer, musician, genius. This, I mean, he's arguably arguably the greatest musician I've ever seen in my lifetime. You know, certainly, you know, when you look at music as a whole and what I've been exposed to in my 36 years of living, you know, he's like, okay, Prince is in my top three favorite artists of all time. You know, he's in my top three. So I already lost two of my three. Of course, for me, yesterday experiencing his death, you know, the day he died, obviously it wasn't quite like 7 years ago when Michael Jackson died. Actually, it was that was a little more personal for me because Michael is a little more. I actually prefer Michael the person more than Michael the artist, so it went a little further for me with Michael. With Prince, there was a lot more barriers there, but nonetheless, I was shocked. And this was weird too when I compared the Prince to Michael Jackson, you know, the day they died. With Michael, I found Michael's death less shocking because of the things I knew already in the days and weeks leading up to his death, what happened. So I was less shocked at Michael's death, but more angry about it. And with Prince, I was way more shocked because, you know, if people know who Prince is, like, I mean, the little that he gave you, but just the stuff that we knew, very healthy. He was into drugs and stuff. People always go to that thing when somebody famous died. Oh, little drugs. Prince was not about that stuff, man. Prince was the antithesis of a rock star in terms of alcohol. He hated it. Like, he absolutely hated alcohol and drugs. I mean, the guy was a vegan. The guy took care of, like, he was big on the bodies of my temple. Yeah, he was big on that kind of stuff. I mean, that's how strict he was. That's why he's staying in great shape through all these years. He looks like he's still 20 years old today. So, you know,
yeah,
passing. So, it's shocking. And I don't want to keep it on Michael because I want to honor Prince today. It's not really about Michael Jackson, it's about my Prince. But it just shocks me, like, to sit there and say, Prince is not alive today. Prince is along with us. That's weird to me. That's really weird to me right now.
Yeah. I'm not going to pretend I was the biggest Prince fan, but I always knew he was there. You know? Like, from my childhood, Controversy was one of the first songs I ever heard in my life.
Right.
You know? Then Let's Go Crazy, Purple Rain, Raspberry Beret. We go on and on. He became the symbol. The most beautiful girl in the world is probably my favorite Prince song, which is, I know, weird for a lot of Prince fans, but that was I was like 15 when the song came out, and that related to me a lot more at the time than when I would hear, like, you know, Purple Rain at 7 years old, you know? So,
Right, I'm with you also, because like I said, you know, and for the record, I never got into this whole, I gotta bring it up again, but I never got into this whole who's better, MJ or Prince, because the fact of the matter is, if you think about it, you can't really compare the two, because they're two completely different artists. They really are. You know?
Because Prince was more about, he's more eccentric, it's more about sex, it's more about, you know, women, stuff like that, the way he sings, and it's not exactly catchy pop like how Michael Jackson did his music, you know?
Right.
Michael Jackson was looking to be the biggest pop superstar ever. Prince just wanted to make music, he made a lot of music that I never even heard of. It's like, suddenly Prince had another album out, like, what? Okay, cool. He was just always around, like, providing music, and you'd hear a random song on the radio station, and it's just like, whoa, Prince has a new song out, cool, whatever. But, you know, he was just always there. You know, his existence was always there.
Prince wasn't into the other stuff. Like, Prince wasn't into, like, Prince didn't give a, I hate to curse here, Prince did not give two shits about celebrity. Like, he was literally about the music. He was about the music of the art, and that was it. That's why you never heard anything about him off stage, because he didn't really care about anything else on stage. He was about the art of music, and I think that separates Prince and not just Michael Jackson, but other artists too. It's so strange. Like, I wasn't like, I'm like you also. When I was a kid, I didn't like him because he was more adult. He was geared towards more adults. He was like more adult like Prince, because, you know, the themes of his music early on in the 70s and 80s were more adult like themes. Michael Jackson's music was more towards, you know, obviously a more universal message, more towards anywhere from 8 to 80. So, obviously, at age 8 and 9, I can't really get Prince at the time, obviously, because, you know, it's not something I'm not really into. But as I get older, though, I start to have a tour of my own, and like Madonna, that I said on the previous podcast, Prince started to really grow on me to the point where I started appreciating the art, the person he was, you know, and just everything in between. And to me, it's a sad day. It really is, because like I said, I'm still in a state of shock. I mean, it's not quite like what I experienced 7 years ago when Michael died, but it's pretty damn close, man. I mean, when Michael died, I was incontrollable. Like Michael died, I was angry, incontrollable. I mean, hell, 7 years later, I'm still old. So I mean, you know, this is tough though. This Prince stuff is really, really tough.
What? When did Erotic City come out? Right, we were still very young, so you appreciated that song more when you were an adult, but really, it's just like, he was just there, he was just a presence. Like, you hear his music, oh cool, awesome, and you're happy, and you listen to 1999, Raspberry Beret, stuff like that, the New Power Generation, you know, again, the symbol, like, it's just there, and I probably didn't appreciate it as much when he was playing music, but, you know, he was always there. Just there.
Yeah, he was, and I think for me, and it was weird because, like, I said this on Twitter earlier today, like, you know, with Prince, and it's really stupid for me to say this, but, you know, it annoys me when people do this when people die. When Dave Bowie died, of course, and other artists that, oh, well, you know, God, he was so great, I missed him, and people also think about it, I can't stand it, you know, and here I'm thinking about, in my own head, like, you know, when he was alive, I probably could appreciate it more. There might have been a fact I listened to Prince at least once a week. You know, he's a regular on a rotation anyway, so I'm not one of the people who did that. But still, I still feel like even with as much as I love Prince's music, and as much as I listen to his music, even up to like this week, I feel like I didn't appreciate it enough.
Yeah. Because there's so much music out there. We missed a lot of his music because, you know, they weren't big hits or whatever. They were just there. Unless you're like a real hardcore Prince fan where you look up everything that he did in the past, then yeah, but for the most part, again, he wasn't a pop star or a rock star. He was just his own thing. He was Prince.
Yeah, he was special in his own way, man. He was definitely somebody that, you know, you look back in 30, 40 years and you look back in 100 years from now, he's gonna be one of the guys you look at, like, yeah, he was Like, I don't give it in tiers. Like, he'll be in that top tier of yeah. like greatest artists of a certain era, a certain, like, you know, 50-year period. He's gonna be on that top of that list. He was that great. He was that great.
Mm-hmm. And he was one of a kind, really, you know? Like, I would read stories about how, you know, he wouldn't let people curse in his house or whatever. Obviously, the Dave Chappelle making fun of Prince that he played basketball, but he really did play basketball, according to some articles. Yeah. So, you know, like, the legend of Prince, it's like, it just keeps growing and growing.
Right, and I feel like Prince, And it's funny, you mentioned it, too. Also, I think I saw on Twitter last night when he passed, but... Prince in the last, like, 10, 15 years, he became like a cult figure, in a sense, where, like, Chappelle Show did a thing on him through, trying to remember his childhood stories, and then, he made a big appearance on A New Girl, last year.
After the Super Bowl. I watched that, after the Super Bowl. I remember that, clearly.
Yeah. The aura he had, on that show, to me, was, wow, oh my God, Prince. I was crazy about it.
That was incredible, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like you mentioned, he became such a cult figure. But, you know, really, like, he was one of a kind, you know? And I've heard the stories about how he's so eccentric, and obviously you can tell by the clothes that he's wearing or whatever, but you know what? That's what's so great about Prince, is that, like, he didn't try to be anybody else but himself. And I always, always admire that. Out of anybody, he was his own person, you know, and it's tough to do that in public, you know, because they want to be the next this, they want to be the next that. Why can't you be the first this like Prince did, right?
Right, like, and I think that's it. That's the desire to impress everybody else.
Yeah,
is that he was so defiant in a way where, like, look, he's gonna be who he is. He's okay with who he is. He doesn't care what you think about it. I'm gonna dress this way, and it's not about you being uncomfortable. It's about you understanding that this is who I am, and that's it. You know.
Yeah.
And he was so okay with that, and this is the thing about Prince I love about that. He never changed from that. It wasn't like he was trying to draw publicity for an album. I'm sure it helped, but.
Yeah.
You know, that was who he is. That's not who he was. That was the kind of person he was. He wasn't taking that. That's, you know, the funny outfits and all that stuff and the guitars and the funny looking guitars and stuff. That was who he is and who he was. And he stuck with that to the very end. You know, that's why he's easy to admire, because, you know, at some point you say, wow, well, this is not a gimmick. This is who Prince really is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's basically to make up of how he is. Like, he's not 5'2" or whatever. Like, he was a short person, but he made it up with such a big character and a big heart, because now all these stories are coming out about Prince, about how he was such a great humanitarian, but he didn't want to make any of this public, because he'll just work behind the scenes and, you know, help people out everywhere he went. And that's what's so cool. He didn't need the attention to be like, oh, look at me, guys. I'm doing something for the community. He didn't even need any of that. He just did it. And that's the way it really should.
And that narrative actually also fits Prince as well, too, because, you know, the privacy thing. He's just not into. I mean, look, there's very little about her like we know. Very little.
Yeah.
Like, it's very little. I mean, and in fact, and even in this era of social media and Twitter and all this stuff, the fact that he can still hack that and still be that is amazing to me. It really is amazing to me. Now, granted, I mean, he's not older now, so, I mean, certainly, maybe if he's in his 20s or 30s, maybe, and with social media now, it might be a little bit different, but still, nevertheless, there are other artists out there who were the opposite way.
Yeah.
They couldn't protect their privacy. But Prince did. Prince was good about it. I mean, for the better or worse, man, he was... Like, he had his shit under control, man. He had his shit under control, period.
Yeah.
Like, he knew he was the captain of his own ship. And that's one thing I think a lot of artists cannot say. Both artists really can't say about themselves.
So, my gal pal, Kathleen Schmidt, she actually helped. She was actually the book publicist for Prince's book back in 2008.
Oh, wow.
And I left it on my Facebook, actually, but there's a story on Entertainment Weekly where Kathleen told her experience about Prince and how he was the nicest guy there is. And she mentioned about how he invited her out to a ride on his, I think, Lamborghini. I forget, but yeah, so they took a car. It had a symbol on it, and then they just took a ride for like 30 minutes. Just a joyride, that's it. Didn't say anything. They just took he just wants some fresh air. They went back to the house. You know?
Yeah.
That's just the way he is. You know? And he was just a really, really nice, according to Kathleen. And, you know, like, he would do stuff for you as long as you would do stuff for him. And, you know, it could be, like, the most difficult task, but you're just so, like, taken by his personality that you would do it for him regardless. You know, because that's the kind of person he is. And then he'll do you favors the same way. So, you know, I kind of wish that I wish I met him, honestly, you know? But
of course. I mean,
yeah.
I regret not seeing him in concert still. Like, I at least saw Michael Jackson in concert before he died. I mean, I can at least say that. I never saw Prince live in concert. And that's something, and it's funny that like, he was touring this year. And I was hoping to see him this year on tour.
Mm-hmm.
And, unfortunately, not people see that. You know, it's really unfortunate. But he was one of my very few bucket lists of artists that I have not seen live yet. And you know, it sucks. It does.
Yeah.
Suck. I mean, I'm genuinely upset about that right now, man. I really am.
Yeah, and again, like I see now that all these stories are coming out, and I just kind of wish that I knew more about Prince. Because and it's a classic of like, well, too little, too late, I guess. And like, he was never in my bucket list, but I will acknowledge that he was really like part of pop culture this entire time. Like, I knew he was there. I knew what kind of contributions he made for music, but knowing from people that he was a great person all around. Now I wish I got to meet him, and not just because of his music, but just to you know, talk to him and chill or whatever, you know, because I'm all about wanting to meet nice people like Prince apparently was. So
yeah, I mean, like I said, he was transcendent in so many ways, and I just hope, you know, this generation of kids and musicians especially too can appreciate.
Yeah.
The art, you know, sometimes, like I said, sometimes it takes taking a person away from us before you realize what you lost.
Yeah.
We've gone through that a lot with a lot of artists and celebrities that were huge, that were impactful in their art and what they brought to the table. And, you know, I hope now that people understand and people appreciate, you know, what a guy like Prince brought to the table. Because Prince was one of a kind, man. Prince was, he was elite. Like, you're looking at, like, if when he was basketball terms, he was in the, like, in the Michael Magic Larry category. You know, he was in that category. He was in that. And
yeah,
to me, the greatest musician I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah. Physically, Prince may be gone, but everything else, spirit, music, name in general, really, he's immortal.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
That's all I got, man. Rest in peace, yeah. Prince.
Rest in paradise, Prince Rogers Nelson.